Hello and welcome to the start of a new series of Conduit Conversations for 2022, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. My guest today is Dr. Kyle Grant, founder of Oxwash, the world's first future-proof and clinically clean washing service, whose goal it is to eradicate the impact of washing on the world's ecosystems and prove that a closed-loop and safe washing process is possible. Kyle, an ex-NASA scientist and synthetic biologist, founded Oxwash when he was studying for his PhD in Oxford. It all began with collecting and washing clothes for fellow students. Since then, Oxwash has grown and grown, venturing into multiple cities, continuously developing new technologies, and disrupting the antiquated laundry and waste industries. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you for having me.
It's really wonderful to have you. You've been lurking around the Conduit for some time, and having you face to face for this new series is just amazing.
Well, it's great to be here, and I am a lurker.
So, Oxwash works to challenge the stereotypical association of laundry being an area that holds little scope for innovation and is, quite frankly, a chore. And that's quite a task to do. So tell me about the journey of Oxwash and how you intend to disrupt the laundry industry.
Of course, yeah. And maybe I can go back to a conversation that I had with my mother when I was doing my PhD and said, "Mum, I'm pissed off doing laundry for myself, my rugby club. This is a nightmare." She says, "Well, do something about it. I'm not doing it for you." And I said, "Okay, cool. I'm going to start a laundry company." And she was like, "What? You're going to do a PhD at Oxbridge and then dive into this antiquated industry?" But quite frankly, it's, you know, a furlough field for innovation. Like, a lot of people don't come out of typical higher education and say, "I'm going to innovate in this space," which I love. I'm contrarian. I like to swim against the tide and do things a little bit differently. And as a scientist, it's really nice to find an area that simple innovations can make big gains, and then you can add those up over time to make a huge impact. So for that point of view, I absolutely love the industry and washing. And I think Oxwash as a whole is really, really coalescing around the principle of washing things in a way that doesn't pollute the planet, but also us as people. And that's something that more and more is becoming evident from science articles and research into the impact of washing on us as people as well.
So let's start with the problem and then move on to how you intend to solve it. So just give us some statistics about the negative impact of laundry and washing and what it is that you're trying to solve for.
So people's typical interaction with washing is either at home with a nice Bosch, you know, touchscreen washing machine under the counter, or maybe a laundrette dry cleaner. You know, you go in, put dirty items in the front of a machine or over a counter, and out they come smelling floral and wonderful. What you don't see are the functions that go into getting those items clean and also the impact of that. And that adds up to water use. Most washing and laundry machines in the UK are connected to drinking water supplies. Clothes don't drink fresh water. Why are we washing them in fresh water? It's a resource that's getting less and less ubiquitous. You know, in the UK alone, we use the volume of Lake Windermere in water to clean our clothes at home. It's massive. Imagine just emptying that lake just to get things clean. Then you add the energy consumption, which unfortunately in the UK is still linked predominantly to fossil fuels and therefore CO2 emissions. And that's astronomical, especially as people wash way too hot. You know, across the first world, 60 degrees is typical. It's something that people have just, you know, had for the last 20 years from their parents and their parents' parents. And, you know, that mantra of you've got to boil it to make sure it's clean. Absolutely not true. It degrades the items twice as fast as well. Then the final facet is the chemistry. You know, the way we use chemistry, detergents, emulsifiers to clean in laundry, coupled with the carcinogenic solvents we use in dry cleaning, means a massive impact on our drain and then water systems, rivers, the oceans, but also us as people. You know, there's lots of research that shows the solvent used in dry cleaning, predominantly called PERC, gives us cancer over time. And that's even worse for the people operating in dry cleaners, typically very cramped environments where you're breathing in that volatile compound over days and years, which is quite frankly heartbreaking. So we've basically decided we're not going to do any of that and to tackle those functions and facets of washing all at the same time, which is a great problem.
So to summarize, water, energy, chemicals, you're trying to solve for those three big categories. So let's do them one at a time, because I think it's really listeners to sort of understand it. It's just kind of a masterclass. So tell us how you address the water issue.
So the main thing with water is to reuse it where possible and use less for each wash load that you're doing. So typically people at home don't fill machines up to the top. You know, you put your items in and you're doing a half load. And the washing machine assumes that it's still a full load and uses too much water per kilogram of laundry, things like that. So we don't do that. We either have systems that reclaim the water between each wash, filter it, and then recycle it in a loop. Or we use functional weighing techniques and algorithms to say, this is the amount of laundry in the machine, therefore we're going to ramp down the amount of water that we use. So we get the items clean, but with the minimum amount of water used. The next iteration will be combining the two and rainwater capture. So we can take that whole principle off grid, which is super exciting.
Tell me about the energy usage. I mean, probably come some self-evident solutions, but how do you try and do the kind of washing process in a less carbon intensive way?
Yeah, so this is something that is both a blessing and a curse for us, because we have two main pockets of energy, the washing part and then drying as well. You don't just wash and then leave it and wear it straight away. The washing part's where we focused over the last couple of years, because washing hot at 60 degrees is a massive kilowatt hour drain on the grid. It's a bit like flipping on a kettle when everyone's watching Hollyoaks. We all know the story that the grid, you know, feels the surge and sometimes goes down. And that's because the energy required to heat water is massive. Its latent heat capacity is very high. So we don't wash hot. It's that simple. You know, we wash at 20 degrees or whatever the temperature in the room happens to be at that time. As long as it's not sub-zero, then the water's not flowing. And then we use techniques, chemistry and other technologies to allow us to clean out stains, but also critically to sanitize the laundry. Heat's often used to get rid of bacteria, fungi, viruses, that kind of stuff, just by boiling it out. But at 20 degrees, that doesn't happen. So we use ozone gas that's generated on site and then bubbled up through the laundry, or use prior to washing in a cabinet that's sealed to sanitize and disinfect the items in the washing process. The big bit for us this year is trying to reduce the amount of energy for drying. It's such an energy intense process that typically you have to use natural gas and burn it to generate heat to dry things. And about 70% of our dryers are electric and the others are still natural gas, which is a problem for me. It's the one thing that keeps me up at night. So we can take those off grid and go onto electric only, but the unit economics of the whole process then really kind of break down. So we're looking at filing patents around using other ways of drying fabrics and textiles using sound instead of heat, which could be very cool.
Can you say more about that, or is it too early to do so, and would it violate the whole idea of a patent?
Yeah, of course. I can't tell you how it looks or how it works, but imagine the principle of vibrating and shaking clothes to the point where the moisture flies out of it rather than evaporates out of it. So that's the principle.
Awesome. Look forward to that. There are many ready puns that I think are available. Sounds like dry clothes. Then I should imagine there's also the transport to and from the facilities, which have a carbon footprint implicit in them as well. The one thing that home washing does is doesn't have that. So one of the things you'll have to take into account or account for being net more energy efficient is that incremental transport to and from. Yes. I should imagine the savings in relation to both water and energy make a significant, you know, outweigh that significantly. But tell us how you think about the transport miles.
Yeah, it's actually the thing that we solve for first. So when I launched the business in Oxford, there are very cramped, small, antiquated streets that driving vans around is a nightmare. So I actually did the iteration of trying to cycle around with a delivery backpack, spray painted blue, carrying people's laundry, broke my back in half, obviously, so that didn't work. Moped, didn't really get on with at all, to be honest. And again, too small for the volume that you need to carry. Vans got stuck, cars got stuck. So I ended up on the asset of a electric cargo bike, which listeners that have maybe seen our brand around the cities of the UK will recognise are these love childs between a kind of pedal bike and a plumber van. You know, they're big assets that you can ride, two wheels, three wheels typically, that are completely zero emission. They do have electric assist batteries because obviously the volume of laundry can get quite heavy. And in some cities, it's quite hilly as well. But it also means that A, we can move the laundry and cleaning around without a CO2 footprint in transport. It's also a phenomenal way for people to see our brand and understand what we stand for out in the world. When you see an Oxwash branded bike, you immediately understand the principle that they're putting, and we're putting sustainability first, rather than a white plumber van that runs on diesel that has Oxwash down the side. So it's something that we're deeply committed to continuing to scale with whilst working with partners and other zero emission fleets to, you know, really scale our operation.
So you've hinted at this, but the chemical components, both in the washing and the drying, what do you do there that's different and that sort of offsets the environmentally damaging aspect of this, potentially the health impacting, carcinogenic impact of chemicals?
So the best way to split this is that when items come to an Oxwash lagoon, we wash them in exactly the same way, no matter if they're a dry clean only item, a laundry item, or often, more and more, don't clean me, I'm made of fungi or petals or these weird and wonderful new sustainable materials that, quite frankly, no one knows how to clean yet. So that'll go round a cycle where each of the washes still uses water. We don't use any other solvent. Water is the universal solvent. You know, it's what life on this planet depends on to function and produce chemical reactions. The principle is exactly the same in washing. So we've cut out all of that perchloroethylene toxic solvents that is typically petroleum based. In fact, there are dry cleaners still that clean clothes in petrol, which is bonkers. So removing that element completely means that we either wash items in a laundry process or a wet cleaning process, but both use water. That's the critical part. Then the chemistry that's used in both of those is fully biodegradable. That's the other facet that you really have to nail. So things like we don't use sodium hypochlorite, which is toilet bleach. Most laundries around the country do. It's incredibly effective at keeping whites white, removing stains, but the impact on the environment of throwing bleach down the drain is massive. It just eviscerates water courses. So we don't use that at all. Ozone is a great oxidant for removing organics and stains and things, but we then worked with Vanish, which is a brand many in the UK will have heard of, to generate a formula which is just hydrogen peroxide based and degrades whilst in the wash back to water and oxygen. No byproducts apart from that, which is fantastic. Then we also more and more are working with a phenomenal chemistry manufacturer on new formulas up in Northamptonshire, where they're made. Often the raw ingredients are farmed around the manufacturing facility, then brought in, then we formulate the chemistry with them and use that in our wash process, using things like oilseed rape from 2 meters away to generate surfactants that help us remove stains. So the carbon footprint as well of that part of our pipeline is coming down, which is really exciting.
So if you're going to distill down the benefits of Oxwash, if you're both a big company or an individual consumer, it uses less water, it uses less energy, and it doesn't use harmful chemicals. Mm-hmm. And those are three massive things from a kind of climate and environmental perspective. How have you found the uptake, you know, both from individuals and from industries, and where are you seeing the kind of the growth in the company coming from?
So when we first launched the business, we put sustainability as the primary message to try and attract customers into the platform. And that worked to some degree, but back in 2018-19, people's view of a sustainable service was, oh, it's a nice to have, but it probably isn't as good, or what's the trade-off that I'm making? So we changed the angle slightly over the course of the pandemic to, look, we're going to clean it better than anybody else at a lower price and at sanitation levels that are 100 times better than the NHS require. So we're just going to get the basics absolutely right and be the best in the world at that. Then when you couple that with a reduction in overheads and all of these things that come in, you can pass on savings to the customer. So what we found in the last 12 months is that as the pandemic has made a lot of businesses focus more on ESG within their business, they come to Oxwash and say, we've heard great things. You know, you seem to just nail the basics. You're on time. The stuff is clean and it's not mixed up or lost with other customers, which are the big, big problems in the industry. Oh, and by the way, we've heard good things about your sustainability. Tell us more. And we'll acquire that customer mainly on the price and the basics. They'll then evangelize and tie in the sustainability with their internal teams, ESG, and also then other clients in their industry. So it's been a really interesting journey and one that I think we'll see more focus on towards ESG, but it's certainly moving that way, which is really, really cool.
So that's something we hear from a load of successful impact companies, that you, in order to succeed, what you have to do is invert what seems intuitive. If you're wanting to make a sustainable restaurant work, you should focus on the food, not on zero waste and sustainability. If you're wanting to make a sustainable fashion brand work, you have to focus on design and style and how it makes people feel. If you want to do a wonderful vegan yogurt, make sure that it's delicious. And use the social impact dimensions as added extras, but not as front and center. But then it becomes loyalty, free marketing, strategic positioning in terms of the niche and the market. And I'm glad that you got there, and it's obviously one of the reasons why you're thriving and succeeding. So if you were to fast forward 5 years from now and think about the blend between people in their homes, individual consumers, Oxford students using Oxwash, or being at the heart of the hotel industry, the sustainable fashion industry, the big industrial scale users of laundry, where do you think your business is likely to be? You might say both, which I suspect you will as an entrepreneur, but where do you think it's moving?
Yeah, I think if I'm honest, it's very, very much in that circular fashion space. You know, we do serve consumers at home, small businesses, medium-sized businesses, and some big ones, you know, like the Dorchester Hotel Group. But we're seeing the fastest growth in circular fashion clients, whether that's clothing rental, resale, refurbishment, you know, post-sale, post-wearing for a couple of months or years. And quite frankly, I think that's where we can make the biggest impact too, because all of those models require washing at the core transaction between customers or between, you know, yourself, if you like. You know, if I'm renting your lovely blazer from you, I probably want that clean before I wear it, and you want it clean back. So there's actually all this washing infrastructure that doesn't really exist. And if it does, it's outrageously unsustainable, and typically it uses dry cleaning. So we see a real purpose in building that infrastructure so that these new models can sit on that scaffold and really grow without having the operational bottleneck of having to build massive cleaning facilities and innovate around the washing, which is our core value.
So in this new series that we've just launched, I'm going to ask everybody about the pandemic, both in terms of the challenges and the opportunities it's presented, but also what it did to your business while you were in the middle of it. I mean, fingers crossed, we are in January of 2022 as we record this, beginning to see the beginning of the end of the kind of acute form of this incredible contagion that's impacted us all so badly. But give us a sense of what it did for you as you were building a business and what you think the enduring impact it will be in terms of how it's positioned you for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think we had phases through COVID. I think the initial phase was just anxiety and terror, right? You really didn't know as a, you know, team member whether this thing was going to be contracted through the laundry, through touch, through going to someone's door to do collections and deliveries. And being a heavily operational workforce, that was tough. So we took the line of, you know, really, really belt and braces when it comes to hygiene, sanitization and things like that. You know, when I used to work in another life in aerospace, when you send modules to the International Space Station, they have to be clean. Anything that you take up that could contaminate the space station will just completely screw up any missions for months, if not years. So that focus around hygiene was one we put front and center, and transparency for our team as well. I think our culture is very open. You know, we share everything from our P&L, cash balance, all of our performance with our team, so that A, we know everyone's on the same page and there's no siloing or closed locked doors, which makes things a lot more efficient. But quite frankly, it means that people really understand their position in the business and how they can contribute as well. I think personally, I learned a lot about just managing people and how to balance that personal side of life with the business. You know, our team grew something like 10x over the pandemic. Whilst all of this is happening, people are moving to a more hybrid work-life balance. And as a first-time founder, that's quite a tough challenge. You know, it's the type of thing that you might learn over a 10-year period in a startup, but it got compressed down to 12, 18 months. So the learning curve was incredibly steep. I think we were lucky in that our community, stakeholders, investors, and the communities that we belong to, the Conduit being one, were very supportive. You know, you can hold yourself bare and say, I'm feeling super stressed, I'm burnt out, I have no idea how to deal with this problem. Does anyone have any context and ideas? And the strength of the crowd and the community really helped get us through. I think it's a culture we now need to maintain post-pandemic. What I don't want is for Oxwash's culture to dilute. Now that we're coming out of the back of the pandemic, the virus is becoming less pathogenic, thank the Lord. And I think it's now a challenge for us to just embed that culture for every new team member as we scale. But this formative period has really brought us together as a team and coalesced that. So fingers crossed, it's a good base to come from.
And if you were to articulate your challenges or your problems, I mean, it seems as though you have a strong niche. It's in a highly polluting industry. You're going to deliver something which has a better environmental and social impact than competitors, efficiently on time at a better price. So the core of the business has every reason to succeed. Being positioned to have every reason to succeed doesn't always equal success, because what you have to do is embrace scaling and actually execute on the scaling. So if you then, and I say this in the context of what we're trying to do with Impact Entrepreneurs, is let people cross-learn and reflect and benefit from each other's wisdoms and insights. So the next phase of Oxwash's journey involves the following XYZ, and what are those things and how do you anticipate meeting those goals?
So the big two for us are at scale, absolutely, and that innovation angle. You know, we've got three sites across the UK. Each one has gotten bigger and served more people, therefore more impact. And we've been able to incrementally improve on those sustainability metrics at each site as we bring in new technologies, try some, they don't work, try some others, those ones might. The big plan now is to do a stepwise change in the way we scale. Our model works really well for small kind of areas where we have what we call a lagoon, our processing facility, and then a surrounding area that we serve by electric bike. But of course, for us to make a big impact, the model needs to combine that model with scale. So we're launching this year, already actually at the moment, across the UK, dovetailing with great partners that have electric emission, zero emission fleets, to be able to take our service to customers UK-wide. That platform allows us to unlock the potential for partners and big networks of customers, whether they're consumers on a platform like Depop, or whether they are businesses like a gym chain like Virgin Active, to be able to access the Oxwash service no matter where they are. That scale also allows us to double down on the innovation. There is a lot of technology that we're patenting, that we've kind of spoken about, that really only works at scale, where automation and the kind of Ocado-esque facility with robotics and things like that allows you to make huge gains that a small facility you struggle to, and quite frankly, it's not cost effective to. So this year, scale and then doubling down on the innovation are the two big things that I'm excited for.
A final question about people. I mean, you've spoken about transparency with the team and building a culture where people get a sense of where the business is going, and that seems to me to be a kind of very powerful thing to do. How do you think about the acquisition and retention of talent? How do you think about building culture? How do you think about a focus on the bottom line and building a robust business, but also keeping people true to mission and not letting those things be in tension with each other?
It's something that I really struggled with early on. And, you know, my mantra when I started the business was treat your team how you want to be treated yourself. And that adage works pretty well, you know, as you're a small team and very tightly knit. But as you get bigger, you need structure. So we've been fortunate, you know, working with the B Corp kind of movement and organization. We're within that structure to get B Corp accredited, which going through the process allowed us to actually structure all of our ethical, you know, employment contracts, the maternity cover, the enhanced policies that we wanted to bring in that we thought should be there. You know, there's a legal requirement. Well, like, that's way too low. You know, you've really got to double down. But there are the new frameworks like Future Plus, which is one we've just completed, that allow you to analyze your business from, yes, the ESG point of view, but more the fair and ethical employer point of view. Things like making sure that every employee has the right to cycle to work and you basically pay for the bike, you know, so the Green Commute Initiative, cycle to work schemes, things like that, which is phenomenal. Then it's things like time off for all sorts of things. Pregnancy is obvious, you know, miscarriage is another one which we're passionate about, which businesses are starting to double down into. And I think what I really enjoy is taking those frameworks and then us as a leadership team saying, okay, that's brilliant, let's use that. But then where can we go a little bit extra to, you know, stand out from the crowd and really double down and use that as a way to attract talent and also retain talent so that our structures and the way that we treat and employ our team is just better than anywhere else, quite frankly. And that's the way that we found to attract and maintain talent to date and hopefully for the future as well.
So parting words to other founders. You're, you know, first-time founder on a journey, you know, many, many, many businesses fail. I'm pretty confident you won't. But along the way, there are things that people can learn from, wish they'd known, might have done differently. But just, if people who are listening to the podcast are in a similar position, contemplating setting up something, some sort of reflections on your journey so far that might be helpful to them.
So the best advice I had post founding the business was from Reid Hoffman, the LinkedIn founder, who said, well, you've done the hard bit. You know, you took the first step, which is you could have gone into management consultancy, back to NASA, whatever. You didn't. You started something and started swimming against the tide. And that's the biggest thing that entrepreneurs need, is the grit and willingness to just step out of their comfort zone into the volatile free market and give it a crack. You know, my advice really would be, if you're thinking about doing that, take the leap. What's the worst that can happen? And like you say, many businesses fail, but you learn a hell of a lot along the way. And it may well be the second, the third, even the fourth venture that gets the product market fit, the timing, maybe a bit of luck, and starts to go to the moon. So just crack at it.
Grit. If there's one thing that is consistent with almost all entrepreneurs we speak to, is courage and grit. And those two things are necessary preconditions, you know, necessary but not sufficient, but certainly necessary. So amazing to talk. We'll have you back as the new facility opens, inshallah, and as you begin to scale even more. But congratulations on all the disruption and all the interesting stuff that you've done thus far. And we look forward to supporting and collaborating with you at The Conduit.
Brilliant. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations. Please do subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. To learn more about Oxwash, please go to their website. And for more information about The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.